Welcome back, my friend. It is ADHD Powerful Possibilities. I am your friend, ADHD Coach Catherine, and this week we have a special guest, Dr. Kathleen Nadeau, author of many books, not least of which is Still Distracted After All These Years, which I would say is probably my favourite book about ADHD for adults, but especially if you're over 45 and going on. If you're younger, it will still give you an insight into what life could be like when you're diagnosed later. I wanted to share this episode last week. As you can hear, I am still not quite back to myself. It's taken me longer to edit and to recover, and so grateful to Dr. Nadeau for her time. I have another special guest lined up next month. In the meantime, I want to invite you to enjoy this episode. We cover a wide range of topics, everything from why older people with ADHD need to have a diagnosis, the benefits of that for them and for their families, how we can support older people with ADHD, particularly after retirement. We talk about the role of gender in ADHD and expectations, particularly in societies where the role of women is still very much as a support human for others. And most of all, we talk about how important the role of community, structure, safety, and acceptance is. We do cover some issues around what it's like to be a woman in different countries, and particularly countries where women are not given the opportunities that they may enjoy in the West. But I would say that the challenges anyone with ADHD faces are significant. And so I invite you to enjoy this episode with Dr. Nadeau. I apologise in advance for the audio quality, and I've done my best, but there's some noise. I hope it's bearable for you. I do my best to edit the clicks and the fidgets which happen when I interview people late at night. I've included in the show notes a link to the petition that Dr. Nadeau mentions, and I've also got a few links to her own resources and other places where you can go to find community, to find some help, and just to discover what is possible when you're an older person or a woman with ADHD. So enjoy this slightly longer than usual episode, and I will be back with you next week. Thank you so much, Dr. Kathleen Nadeau, for giving us your time today. I mentioned you in my podcast that just came out. I described you as the OG, the original, when it comes to ADHD and women. And your book, Still Distracted After All These Years, I've got so many post-it notes and marks and things in it. It made such a difference to me when I was able to find it, read it, and understand so much about my life. And so to celebrate women with ADHD in March, I've asked you to come and share the thing that you really want women to know about ADHD. And in particular, I guess for those of us over 50, we sometimes feel like a lot of the attention is on younger people. Please tell us, what is it that you have learned and seen so often in your experience with this particular group of people?
Absolutely. I would love to do that. And I, of course, am also a woman with ADHD well over 50. And funny that it took me a long time to convince a publisher that there was a need for a book about older adults with ADHD. Because if you think back, it hasn't been many years that we've recognized that adults have ADHD. You know, the first 10 or 15 years that I specialized in ADHD, most people believed, I wasn't among them, but most people believed that the great majority of people didn't have symptoms to speak of after they passed their 21st birthday, which is, of course, absurd. And we now know that is not the case. But before I start talking about older women with ADHD, I would like to tell you something, and I hope you can broadcast it to all of your listeners. And that is that I am starting a petition to APSARD. And APSARD is the American Professional Society for attention and related disorders, the U.S. Professional Society for everyone that focuses on ADHD. Mm-hmm. And they are in the process of developing guidelines, recommendations for adult diagnostic criteria. As most of your listeners know, the diagnostic criteria were based on our observations of little boys. And we've kept tweaking the diagnostic criteria, but we've never done a major revision, and we've never developed diagnostic criteria that were really specifically for adults. So my petition is, there's a committee, a very highly regarded committee that is developing these guidelines. My petition is, please, as you develop these adult guidelines, please focus on guidelines that will better diagnose women, because that's the huge missing piece. They went from children to adults, but the child criteria are based on boys and the adult criteria are based on men. And so we have a petition that anyone can sign. It hasn't been posted yet. We plan to post it probably in the next 48 hours on an online site called change.org. And it's a petition to APSARD, APSARD, on more gender equitable diagnostic criteria for women. And I want to get as many signatures as we can. And we're going to present this to APSARD, that we have 4,000 women that have all signed on. And we're getting certainly people that have devoted their career to focusing on the issues of girls and women are the authors of this petition. Mm-hmm. And then we want to get as many people, women, of course, as possible to sign it. And I think one of the things that I would start with is that many women, I would say the majority of women that come as adults finally seeking an ADHD diagnosis have already been diagnosed with something else. Yeah. That something is often depression or anxiety, could be other issues as well, but those are the most common. And psychiatrists, psychologists think, no, this is depression. That's why you can't focus. No, this is anxiety. That's why you're so scattered, completely missing the ADHD.
Yeah.
To us older women, I've spent my long career looking at who are we ignoring. The first venture was, we're ignoring the adults, and that's when we thought it was a disorder of childhood. And my very first professional book was on diagnosis and treatment of adult ADHD. And when I finished that book, I thought, who are we ignoring? Girls and women. And so the books came out, Understanding Girls with ADHD, Understanding Women with ADHD. This last is another huge population that we've been ignoring, and that is older adults with ADHD. Mm-hmm. And statistically, this is an amazing statistic. By the year 2030, we're talking about 6 years, there will be more in the United States, is probably the same in the UK. There'll be more people over 65 than under 18 in the country, which, if you think about it, means that there are more older adults with ADHD than kids and teens with ADHD, because our demographics are changing. Yeah. And so it's just so important to focus on the needs of older adults. And I'll tell you a funny story. My husband is a scientist, not a mental health professional. Mm-hmm. And when I told him that I was starting to write this book, his immediate question, and I think it's a question a lot of people ask, is, why does an older adult even need to get diagnosed with ADHD? I mean, they're not in school, they're not working. I mean, why do they just completely misunderstanding that ADHD impacts absolutely every aspect of our existence? It impacts the way we interact with people. It impacts the way we feel about ourselves. It impacts what we can accomplish during the day, how much sleep we get at night. I mean, it's hard to find something that it doesn't impact.
Absolutely.
And the message is, it's very important. And I've had some adults ask me, well, I've lived this it, not knowing I had it, so why does it matter now? You know, they're almost dismissed the possibility that their life can change and improve if they understand what's going on. So that's what motivated me to write this book. And it took me about 10 years to convince a publisher that there would be a market for a book for older adults. And I think what really convinced them was the change in demographics. I was able to tell them that in the U.S., over 10,000 people per day reach their 65th birthday.
Oh.
So every day, 10,000 more, 10,000 more. So there's a huge number of people. And because of how long it's taken us to understand ADHD, all these people 65 and older, almost none of them are diagnosed, almost none.
Absolutely. And I think the thing you said about what's the point of being diagnosed now, something that I've heard quite often, you know, I've got clients from 18 to 70 and the older people, a few of them, I said, my children don't see the point. My grandson, my granddaughter's been diagnosed, but they don't understand why I want to bother. So I think what you're saying about it affecting every single part of your life throughout your whole life is something that people don't understand yet, and they write it off.
They don't understand it, but I also think it's a function of that if you're 65 or 70, you don't have anything to accomplish, you know, doesn't matter. Nothing you do matters
yeah.
anymore. And I am well past my 65th birthday and still have a lot I want to accomplish in this life. And I see that in more and more adults, that later years are very different. And I think about it frequently that my life, I'm in my late 70s now, and my life is utterly different from my parents' lives. I mean, my father died in his late 70s. My mother had not taken care of herself. She had difficulty walking. Mm. She was not very mobile. I mean, she was a little old lady as we think of it. And I think our generation has really realized that a lot of that is self-imposed. A lot of it is not eating well, not sleeping well, not exercising, and also attitude. I'm old. Where's my rocking chair? I should sit down
yeah,
now.
Absolutely. And when you were talking in the book about the kind of daily habits and the studies that show that you can improve your brain health and your physical health at any age, do you sometimes find people are a little resistant to change because they maybe feel ashamed or embarrassed about not doing things better when they were younger? Or are they quite open to adding new things to live better as they get older?
I don't find that people are feeling ashamed, but I do find that people often feel overwhelmed. Mm. And I can give you an example. I have an old college roommate. She and I have been friends forever. And sadly, she was diagnosed with Alzheimer's about 2 years ago. And I went to see her. I only get to see her about once a year, maybe. And she shared that with me. It was clearly in the very early stages. I said, do you know about the book by Dale Bredesen, his studies of how much you can not only stop cognitive decline, but actually reverse it? And she nodded and said, yes, I've heard about it. I have the book. And it's just too much. And I think for her, and I think for many people, they're not looking at how can I begin to make changes. They're looking at, here am I, and here is what Dale Bredesen, medical professionals, think I ought to be doing. And there's so much, they're so far apart, I can't possibly do it. I give up before you. And I think one of the things that Bredesen realized, he's trained a lot of physicians in his approach. And one of the things they came to realize is that people need coaching. Yeah. You can't just say, here's the list of go home and do it, because it does feel. And I've done a lot of work with people on changing how they eat. And I've changed how I eat. If I look back at what I ate 25 or 30 years ago, no comparison. And I didn't eat a horrible diet, but it was filled with junky snacks and fast food sometimes. And, you know, I just wasn't paying particular attention. The change that I've undergone that I really try to teach people was very great, because I find that any, you know, it's like New Year's resolution. Yeah. I'm going to get up in the morning, I'm going to run a mile, yeah. then I'm going to, you know, we all know how those resolutions yeah. go. And so we really are developing a program at my clinic of trying to help people just make small incremental changes. Let's make a change that's so small that you know you can get up in the morning and do it, and the next morning and do it, because it's not a huge shift. Yeah. And it really all needs to be integrated, that as we're learning that we need to be more active, I mean, you might start with, you're going to walk your dog around the block after breakfast. I mean, it doesn't, you don't have to run a marathon, yeah. but to be moving. And I think this is an enormously important message mm-hmm. as we're living longer, that we, there really is such a thing as brain health. And we're just starting to realize that we can have a huge impact. I mean, we've known that about our hearts yeah. and, you know, our muscles, and but there really is brain health, and we can have a negative impact on our brain by drinking too much alcohol, by getting too little sleep or very poor quality sleep, by rarely exercising. Mm-hmm. So that's an important message for older people, but for middle-aged people. And that's really, I think, when I started thinking about yeah. it, when I was no longer young, and we can get away with an awful lot abusing our bodies when we're in our 20s and 30s and even into our early 40s. Uh-oh. But then it's starting to get real. And absolutely. Yeah. But going back to, why does it matter if you have ADHD as an older adult? I interviewed 150 people, and each of them for at least an hour, a very personal interview. Half were men, half were women. And I asked them in particular, are the ways in which you are most negatively impacted by ADHD? And the number one thing was, I just can't seem to get anything done. And they were saying this with resignation, with a little bit of sadness, that I had so many dreams of what I was going to do when I retired. I was going to write a book. I was going to paint. I was going to hike the Appalachian Trail, whatever their dream was. Yet older adults with ADHD tell me, I feel like I've been busy all day and I have no idea what I did with my time. And I certainly am not living the life I want to live or that I dreamed yeah. of.
And I think when they are able to understand that this is ADHD rather than a personal failing or weakness, it opens the window a little bit so they feel that they can move forward instead of being stuck in that cycle of not knowing what to do.
Absolutely. And I think one of the most powerful things that we can offer to people of all ages, but especially to older adults, is group involvement. You belong to a group of people your age with ADHD, because for the great majority of people, they've never had that experience in their life. They've just compared themselves to people without ADHD, and I'm such a failure, I'm so forgetful, I mess everything up, etc. And my clinic, when COVID hit, which is beginning to be a number of years, we started a number of free online, and one of those support groups was for older adults with ADHD. And I and one of my longtime colleagues at my clinic, who's about my age, decided we would do it together. So she and I started, and it was free, it was online, anybody could join. And surprise, with an occasional exception, it was all women. A couple of times a man would join us and just online listening, say very little, and after a time or two, never show up again. Obviously, they hadn't found. But the point I was trying to make is these were all older women with ADHD, and they said in pretty short order that it was the most important event of their week to talk with each other. And we were just, I and my colleague were just facilitating the group discussion. I mean, we might answer a question about ADHD or, you know, give a little opening commentary, strike the discussion off. But they were really connecting with each other, encouraging each other, appreciating each other, understanding each other. And what was so interesting is almost every one of them was very creative in one way or another.
Yeah.
And they began to share that, and it was show and tell, you know, look at the quilt I'm working on, look at the painting I just finished, or let me read a poem I wrote last week. I mean, it was an amazing, creative bunch of women. And this was just a random group of women. It wasn't a group for creative women. But I really think that's something we don't talk enough about, is there really a strong creative streak, and that maybe the very kind of brain that makes it hard for us to remember all the mundane details of our day is the very kind of brain, because it is thinking in lots of different directions and making connections, is a creative.
Yeah.
And I think one of my strongest messages now, there's a whole movement, fairly recent, and it started among people on the autism spectrum, talking about neurodiversity and that autism is a type of, and we used to see it as a type of disorder that we're supposed to fix or wish we didn't have. And I really believe that ADHD is a type of brain. And because we started looking at it in school children and the way school is structured, it's an ADHD-friendly place to be when you're a kid. And so we started off thinking of it as a disorder. Mm-hmm. How do we fix this so they can sit in their seat quietly and listen to the teacher? When I really think what we should have been asking is, how can we design an educational experience suits their brain, suits their need for stimulation? And
my own small group of six women, single one of them is creative, painters, artists, writers.
That's surprising.
And it's, as you say, it's the community and the support and the understanding that they find really valuable. But I'm thinking, is there an element of that creative brain that leads us into things like they're all self-employed, or there's a couple of academics, but most of them are self-employed. You could argue many academics are almost self-employed.
Right.
But is that the same strength that comes from the creative end of the ADHD brain, maybe in the workplace?
Well, they've done studies that show that there's a much higher rate of ADHD among entrepreneurs. It's for the same reason. ADHD brains very good at coming up with ideas, not so good at following schedules and following rules and fitting into some kind of organization that requires a lot of careful self-management. So I think creative people, you could say it wouldn't work very well. All right, your assignment is to write a book and it's due in 6 weeks. Well, you could write a book in 6 weeks. It wouldn't be a very good one. And we all know full well that some of the best known authors spent years writing a book. I mean, creativity can't be done on demand. The metaphor I use is that we need to plant ourselves in the right garden. And it's not that everybody with ADHD belongs in the same garden. That's not true at all. I mean, some people with ADHD are very extroverted, hyperactive, hypersocial, and these are the people with ADHD that go into entertainment and politics and sales and whatever involves constant persuasion and interaction. And as you well know, there are people that seem completely the opposite, that are quiet and more introverted. And I think one of the things that I have as a mission is to explain that this thing we call ADHD is very, and I'm just thinking of a young man that I was doing a career assessment on recently. And I always want to look at the testing that's, if there has been testing done, to integrate that information into making career suggestions. So he didn't have a copy of it. He was 21. And I said, may I email your mother? And I did. And her initial response was, well, why do you need it? He has an ADHD diagnosis, as if her belief was that once you know that, then you know exactly what my son is like. And that's not the case at all, because we are whole, complicated mm-hmm. people. We're not just, you know, we can't just stick an ADHD label on ourselves and be done with it. And so we have to take all of that into account. And I really want to leave a message for people that may be uncomfortable with this diagnosis, that it doesn't put you in a box in any way. It really provides you a window to begin to understand yourself better and to understand the kind of environment in which you're going to thrive. And one of the stories that I wrote about in my book was an older woman with ADHD. And she'd been an art teacher, there you go with the creativity, and had raised two daughters on her own and had been pretty darn functional all of her life. And then she retired and her daughters were grown and had moved to different cities. So she decided to move near one of her daughters, which, you know, sounds like a good idea. Why not? And her life absolutely fell apart. And her daughter came to me going, this is my mom's situation. What in the world do I do? And what had happened, when you think about it, is we people with ADHD need structure, and because the thing that our brains aren't that good at is staying on time and on track. That's not what our brains are focused on. And so she had a busy life with lots of structure. She had a job. She had colleagues. She mm-hmm. knew where she was supposed to be when. And she was in an environment where the bells rang at the end of classes. You know, it kept her on track. And her daughter's activities kept her on track. So she moves to this city where she doesn't know mm-hmm. a soul but her daughter, who has a busy life. She's a working career woman with raising kids. She moves into a little apartment nearby. And she doesn't even get herself unpacked. Her daughter said, when I go over to my mother's, there's a wall stacked with unpacked boxes. She just feels overwhelmed. She doesn't know where to put it. She's not cooking regular meals anymore. She's living on cheese and crackers and whatever she can find in the refrigerator. She has no bedtime. She has no getting up time. She has no activities. She has no friends. And she was really struggling. When I heard all this and met her mother and talked with her, it just really became clear that we needed to provide her with more structure, that her job and her role and her life were no longer there. And in her case, it was a pretty simple fix in that her daughter found a senior community that was affordable for her mother, provided that structure. It provided meals if you wanted them. It provided social activities. All you had to do is, and there was a structure to the place that gave a structure to her day. And within 2 or 3 months of her moving there, she was her old self and was getting involved with art again. And I think that's one of the big struggles for older adults, is when the structure of our social life goes away, the structure of our work life, that you have a time to get up and a place to go and a time to get there, and all of that helps our brain function more. And then you begin to understand why retired adults with ADHD say, I've been busy all day and I don't know what I did.
And the isolation that you described so clearly for that lady, I think, is something that, you know, they talk about an epidemic of loneliness. But in
I've been reading a lot
in about the context of older women with ADHD, whose children are grown, their kids are busy, they don't have a job, their partner maybe isn't around anymore. What can we do? How can we support these people better to connect with each other?
Absolutely. And what I tell people, and there are certainly different levels of it, is that what's hard for us with ADHD is to be the organizer of activities. I mean, if we have to be the one to say, okay, let's have a book club. I'll call up 9 people and see if they want to be in the club and I'll organize it. And that's just not the strength set of someone with ADHD. And whether it's actually moving into a senior community where all that exists or looking for activities within your community, it's so important at every phase of life to wake up with a sense of interest and possibility.
Yeah.
And it's not going to happen if it's all up to us. So there are volunteer activities. I've encouraged a number of people to go back to work part-time. I worked with another school teacher, who was just absolutely lost after she retired. And I really encouraged her to look around, and she got a job at a big fancy resort a few miles away from her little retirement home. She worked in the gift shop.
Yeah.
You know, she was an intelligent woman. She'd been a school teacher, and so it certainly wasn't very intellectually demanding, but she loved it because she said people are staying in the hotel, and she was telling me about all these celebrities that had come in that were staying at the hotel, that sort of thing. And so it gave her 3 or 4 hours a day of people to interact with, and she knew I need to be there at this hour, and so I have to get up and shower and dress. And it gave her that stimulation and sense of purpose and structure that helps everybody, but especially those of us with ADHD.
Yeah, I think it is something that we all struggle with at every stage. But when you're retired, you're left to dangle. And as you say, it's that you're somehow invisible, or your opinion, your experience is no longer required because you're over 65, maybe.
But you're old.
Yeah.
Why does it matter?
Yeah, they just...
I mean, nobody would say, why does it matter if you have dementia? But
I know. It's so weird. I don't want to take up too much of your time, but before we go, you were talking about the interplay between our social role as women and the ADHD brain, and how those two things give a really unique experience to those of us in kind of the role of women.
Absolutely. And I think not nearly enough has been written about, thought about this, because there are tons of books for women, but it's really, there are books about how can you manage, how can you develop systems so you can meet all the expectations you face in life. I think I always joke, somebody didn't do the math when all us women went to work, because I am the oldest of the baby boomers. So my generation was the really first generation of women that went to work. And we still got married and we still had children. The world continued to expect of us what our mothers who had stayed were capable of doing. I mean, if there are 3 jobs, there need to be 3 people doing those 3 jobs. What's really interesting, I've written and thought a lot about this, is during World War II, many women went to work because they were needed. The men were at war. The women worked in the factories in all kinds of roles that had always been filled by men. In the U.S., guess what? I hadn't known this. The federal government provided good childcare for these women, knowing how can they possibly go to work if we don't provide childcare. The minute the men came home from World War II, women lost their jobs, all federal childcare disappeared, and they're back in the house. Okay, well, that's fine. They were housewives. But only 18, 20 years later, women started going to work, and there was no thought of who's going to take care of the children. Yeah. You figure it out. And so I read a study, fascinating, because I'm always thinking about how society and ADHD intersect. And in some societies, it's much harder to be a woman with ADHD than others. And those are the societies that really value order and precision. And Japan is certainly one of those societies. And I just see that came out very recently, in which they were comparing outcomes of men versus women with ADHD. And in Japan, women with ADHD are much more likely to be divorced than men with ADHD. In other words, the wives don't divorce their ADHD husbands, but the men divorce their ADHD wives because you're not doing your job. You're supposed to keep everything in order. They're more likely to be divorced. They're more likely to be unemployed or underemployed. Mm. Once again, because in Japan, the roles that are commonly given to women are the roles that require tremendous executive functioning skills. You know, you are the organizer of things. You're supposed to keep me on track. That's your job. So much harder to be a woman. And I think not nearly enough attention has been paid to not only are we dealing with a job and parenting responsibilities and household responsibilities, but we're more likely to become divorced, which means we're single parenting with ADHD, with a job, with a household. And on top of that, we're very likely to be raising children with ADHD, which is challenging if you don't have ADHD.
Exactly. Yeah.
And so it just piles layer upon layer of impossibility. And so many poor women blame themselves, like, what's wrong with me? I should be able to manage when we're being asked to do absurd things.
You could even add on another layer of caring for parents who are becoming frailer or less independent and who need our support. And the group of women that I generally work with are very thinly spread jelly in the sandwich.
Yes. That's a very good metaphor. Very thinly spread.
Yeah.
Can't quite cover that sandwich, and the sandwich keeps getting bigger.
A double decker. I'm fascinated by the social role of women, but I wonder if there's almost a reluctance to engage with it because, again, there's a social expectation that women will be inclusive and not demanding. And when we, you know, when I said I'm starting a women-only group, I did get some people saying, well, I'm a guy with ADHD, why am I not welcome? So I wonder if there's a slight reluctance to say our experience is different and the expectations and demands on us are different. So do you think that's just women being either invisible and not worthy of study, which is a science thing, or is it a conditioning thing where we're reluctant to maybe make space for ourselves?
Oh, I think we're very much conditioned that our first job is to meet the needs of those.
Yeah.
And another interesting thing I have found recently, and I don't know if anyone's written about this yet, is I'm seeing more, I mean, gender diversity among women with ADHD. Mm. And I really think it's more of a gender role rather than a sexual role. If I say I'm gender neutral, or I don't identify as a woman, then I'm basically announcing you can't lay all that on me. I don't identify. And I am finding that there's an increasing number among women with ADHD of a decision to remain, as the phrase goes now, child-free, childless by choice, not by circumstance, because they're realizing how in God's name can I do all
that? Absolutely. And I think that opting out, it almost feels like we shouldn't have to opt out of parenting or whatever we choose to identify as. I understand why people are doing it, because why would you choose to opt into a role where you are expected to fulfill everybody else needs, to be the support human for the rest of the human race, when you can say, actually, no, I'm stepping out of that. And I think in some ways it gives me confidence that women are able to do that now with less consequence. But there are lots of women who still feel that pressure. And when they have ADHD, it just becomes almost overwhelming for them, so that they do struggle. And then they go to their doctor, who gives them some antidepressants, right? Instead of saying, you know, your kid is neurodivergent, maybe we should screen you as well. So I wonder, what can we do to help these women briefly?
Well, you know, I think these kinds of issues are being slowly dealt in many parts of the world. And it's so we're really talking about the intersection of having this thing called an ADHD brain and being a human being that identifies as female. And I was listening to an interview online last night by an Afghan woman who is now in the U.S. and has written a book. Her mission was to try to provide education to Afghan girls. And then we know what happened in Afghanistan. Yeah. And she was one of the fortunate ones that was able to escape. And she's written a book titled Last to Eat, Last to Live. And she was explaining that in Afghan society, the females never sit down and never eat until all the males have been served and all the babies have been taken care of. And I was talking to my husband about it and saying, actually, they're being treated like that. We don't want you to be educated because that would give you power and agency in this world. And you serve us and then you meet your own needs, if and when you can.
Yeah.
Yes. So I think, I mean, it's amazing that there are women in Afghanistan that are brave enough to do this. And I think it's happening in different ways all over the world, and that there is a political backlash against it. That I think there are big parts, especially in the U.S., but I think elsewhere also, more conservative families that are very alarmed that women are wanting reject this role, you know, and that it needs to be more egalitarian.
Yeah. Thank you so much for your time. I really appreciate it. I could literally talk to you all day, but I'm looking forward to sharing information about the petition with everybody that I can find. Thank you again. And it's been a joy to speak to you. Thank you. Okay.
Good. I enjoyed it too.
Well, that was quite a trip, wasn't it? That was really amazing. Dr. Kathleen Nadeau is one of those people who I have read about for such a long time. And then to finally talk to her was such a gift. And I want to, again, appreciate all the work that she has done and continues to do, to have the energy, the passion, the mission that keeps her pushing forward. 75, which I find hard to believe, is really fantastic and such an inspiration. I hope you enjoyed it. It's my first interview as a podcaster, and I did try very hard not to completely gush at certain points. I would love you to sign and support the petition that Dr. Nadeau mentions to APSARD. I've got a link in the show notes. It's hosted on change.org, and if you type in change.org ADHD women APSARD, it will come up, but there's a link in the show notes if you would prefer to click on that. Next week, we are moving back into territory that's perhaps more familiar. It's just me again, as long as my voice holds out. And we're going to be looking at what actually causes procrastination and what can we do about it. This is a universal affliction. All humans experience procrastination. But as I always say, everybody goes to the bathroom, but if you're going to the bathroom 50 times a day, you have a problem. And that is very much the case with ADHD and procrastination. And if you are somebody who is running a business, you are self-employed, and you are procrastinating, the buck stops with you. So it's rather urgent that we find a way to get past this and understand it better. So that's what we're looking at next week. Proper dive into the different flavours of procrastination and how you can overcome them. Please keep emailing, and I read every single email that comes in, and I'm so grateful to you all for sharing and supporting the show. I will see you next week when we look at procrastination and from ADHD Powerful Possibilities. I wish you a very good week, and look after yourself until then.